Get connected with Take Two Radio on Facebook or Twitter at Take Two Radio. For email updates on future shows, follow at Blog Talk Radio. For previous episodes, upcoming guests, and more, visit Take2Radio.com.
Well, good evening from almost summer Chicago. Welcome to Take Two Radio. I'm Pam, your host, and joining me today is David, my co-host. David, we are at like 60 degrees today. Do you believe that?
I believe that. Do you believe that just before we called in, a storm is just clearing in my area?
So, oh, yeah, I do.
It's all gone.
Storms all over the place. And it seems to be, you know, all of us in this pocket from the Midwest to the East Coast, with rain, yet it's not getting to the West Coast where they need it. So, Mother Nature, if you're listening, take a break from us and go put it over there on the West Coast where they need it. we'd appreciate that, and give us summer at least for a couple days. Thank you. And right, exactly. Exactly. Well, let's see if we can get some better jokes from our guest tonight, and I'm sure we will because I'm definitely not a joke teller. Tonight we welcome actor and stand-up comedian Tommy Gooch, and I do believe he is with us right now. Tommy, can you hear me?
Crystal clear. How are you? Tough act to follow,
well.
I'll tell you two.
Oh, yeah, right.
All those weather jokes. I don't know if I could do it. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Everybody wants what they don't have, you know. When it's not, you know, then when it's 98 in July 18th, everyone's gonna be like, "Oh, where's the rain and the snow?" And then, you know.
Yeah, you know what? I'm actually not one of those people.
Oh, what are
even
you?
Even if it, I was born in the wrong state. I'm in Illinois.
Okay.
I love the warm weather all year around. Even if it's humid and 98 degrees, I'm happy. I just love that. And, of course, the sunshine. I'm just not a winter person.
That's my wife, then. So you'd get along good with her.
Good.
Just humidity, sun, heat, whatever. What can I tell you? But it's the same kind of over here. Overcast, dreary. Sun comes out a little bit. 4th of July was nice, and well, actually, it was a little rainy, but all right, enough with the weather. Come on, it's so boring.
Yeah.
I'll call my father if I want. I'll dial in for him for a half hour if I want to talk about the weather.
Yeah.
But nice to meet you. Glad we could connect. I know, I think I had to reschedule, and then you had that water issue, right? You lost power or something like that over there?
Yes.
Okay, I hope, obviously.
Yeah, that's good now. Yeah, anytime it's, you know, a lot of downpour, just like anywhere else, you know, it floods out, so it happens.
Okay.
But, yes, we're very happy that you're with us today. We finally got connected, and we're looking forward to a great show with you. So let's go back in time and tell us about, like, when you were a kid, who or what made you belly laugh?
Oh, I love this. What made me belly laugh? A Big Mac.
Yep.
What made me belly laugh? You mean like what? I mean, I was always. First of all, how are we here? Can I curse? Not that I'm looking to curse, but
sure.
Yeah,
I
you can. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I was always a horse's ass in school. I was always the conduct problem kid, the troublemaker. Always. Oh my God. Yeah. I was. I was never a comedian per se. You know, when you hear guys like Seinfeld, they would always talk about how they wanted to be a comedian. That never crossed my mind. It was more just I loved attention. I still love attention, but now I know I got to do it in certain ways. But.
Right.
Yeah, I just love, you know, I was the class clown. Whenever I see people from school now, they'll be like, oh, I should have known you were going to be that way. But I'm like, really? You should have told me. I wouldn't have majored in accounting.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I mean, I have a bachelor's degree in accounting, you know. I mean, I told my father I wanted to go into performing arts, and he laughed at me. It's kind of like when Elvis told his father he wanted a guitar, and his father said, come on, guitar? You're not worth a damn with a guitar.
Yeah.
But I was always a horse's ass, always, trouble. I was that was, when you hear class clown, oh my God, that was me. Troublemaker conduct all the time. But what made me belly laugh? I come from the 70s into the 80s, so, you know, I was in Eddie Murphy, Rodney Dangerfield, you know, Andrew Dice Clay, Love Jackie Gleason. When people ask me who my favorite comedian is, I always say my favorite entertainer was Jackie Gleason. Love him. And I don't mean Ralph Kramden, Jackie Gleason. Watch the old Jackie Gleason. I mean, I love Ralph Kramden, but, you know, watch the old Jackie Gleason shows. Those were my favorite, just coming out. Live entertainment, you know, there was no cut or take, you know. They were on live TV, so, but that's, you know, but that's when you ask me who made me belly laugh, that was it. That was me. That's pretty much it. Yeah, I'm trying to think. Yeah, I mean, I have no idols comedically like that. Nothing like that. Like, oh, people say, oh, my favorite was this. I mean, if you ask me to think hard, it was, you know, Rodney, Eddie Murphy. I was part of the '80s boom with Dice and stuff like that. Love those guys. You know, I mean, then it's changed throughout the years, but those were like those guys in the early days.
All good ones too. Yeah, I loved them all, and especially Jackie Gleason. I mean, that's something that my parents would watch, and Ralph Kramden. Yeah, that's, if you want to know who my father is, it's who Ralph Kramden and my father are.
Those shows. I mean, you know, and I'm young too. I'm 47, so I mean, those shows were long gone. So, but I saw them on reruns and stuff like that. You know,
right.
And you just get influenced by them. You know, just the live entertainment. I always remember my father telling me that it was live. I love that. Like, I love the fact that he went out. There was no cut. I always remember that stimulated me. And so that's when I think of the live entertaining now. You know, I think back then. You know. Just, you know, they couldn't go cut action. The guy walked out with a suit and a cigarette, a carnation, and, you know, I always loved that.
And that was it. Yep, that was it.
So that's,
well, you said you went to school for accounting. I mean, how did you go from that to being a stand-up comic? I mean, hello, different spectrums here.
Yeah, well, it was just, you know, I did the whole, you know, my father was school. It was just go to school and go to college and... And being a comedian and entertainer just never really, I can't say it was ever taken for seriously. You know, actually when I was in high school, I remember my teacher telling me I should go into dramatic arts and performing arts. And still, it was a spoof. I can't even lie on this interview or tell anybody to say it ever crossed my mind or was ever addressed in my household. It was going, you know, you're going to go to college and you're going to get a degree and you're going to work and go up the ladder of success, and my father believed in education, still does. To this day, 70 years old, I still bicker with him all the time. He's pro college and education, you know, and, you know, work your way up the ladder, and that's it. Yeah, so I just got a degree in accounting, floundered around like a lot of people, and then I wanted to go into acting. That's why I've told Eric Jacob, my partner, in the which I'm sure will bring up his name. But, you know, I wanted to go into show business and acting, but then just stand-up comedy was presented to me. And stand-up comedy is the kind of thing where, you know, very little training. You're thrown to the wolves very quickly, and that's kind of what happened. And I was very successful early, so it kind of gave me that label of being a comedian. And so we'll continue, but that's really where that happened. So forget about the accounting. People always tell me, oh, you have a degree in accounting. At this point, my degree in accounting is worth about as much as my degree in, you know, marine biology. You know, I don't remember. All I know about accounting is it begins with the letter A, so, you know.
Right.
So, I mean, I have a college ring. I always... I have a college ring, but yeah, I'm sorry, guys, what did you say?
Going to college made you capable of getting out the bigger words during your comedy sense. So there.
Yeah, and it taught me how to cheat better. I cheated in high school, but in college you cheated with a more professional flair. But I have a joke, Pam. I wasted my father's money, but only because of, you know, what I am now, and I'm hoping to keep going further in entertainment and you know, in acting and stand up comedy. I'm like, what did a degree in accounting do? But. You know, we are where we are, right? We go forward, you know, and that's it. I don't know. Did you ever dream of becoming a radio person? You know, who knows where we
are,
right?
Never. Never. And that comes a lot with age, you know, because when you're young, you don't know what you want to be. People ask you that from the time you're born. What do you want to be when you grow up?
Oh,
you know,
that was a thing.
Changes.
What do you like to do? What do you like to do? What do you want to do? It's like, even to this day, you know, it's... I even try to tell kids, you know, my stepson is mid-20s. You don't know what you're doing. You think, you know, obviously at that age, you know, when you're in your mid-20s, people my age are idiots. I know it. I lived it, you know. My father was a dope. I mean, he was a dope because you know everything at that age. So I'm trying, you know, you don't know. You know, you could become, no. You know, people, you know, in their mid-20s, they do things in their 40s and 50s. They didn't have that planned out. Some, listen, there, you get that one out of 500 that said, I wanted to do this, and they followed it the whole way. But, you know,
right.
Mm-hmm. You don't know. So if you would have told me that I was going to be 47 years old, standing in an office, in my office, talking to a lady in Illinois, you know?
Yeah.
I said yes. I should say the yes, right? I said the yes. It's Illinois, right?
It's Illinois, that's yeah. Right. I'm virtually slapping you on both cheeks now.
So why didn't they just spell it Illinoy? It would have been a lot easier for me.
I don't know. I don't know. You have to go back and ask the Indians, I guess. I really don't know.
Oh, Lord.
Well,
so who's Dave? Does he
okay.
speak? It sounds like my marriage is. He's allowed to do anything. What's he doing over there, Dave? Is he a pie? Is he a sidekick?
I'm listening to you, sir. You make me laugh.
All right.
Yeah, he
input,
pops
Dave.
In every once in a while when I give him a chance.
Yeah.
Well, that's good. How much time do we have? What am I here for, a half hour? How long am I here for?
For as long as we are.
Oh, until you kick me off? Okay.
Yeah, the two-hour limit, then we go into recording. The show will no longer be live at that time, but I don't think we're going to be on for 2 hours.
No, all right.
Well, what was it like for you being on stage for the very first time? I mean, how did you get that first job or first?
Great. To this day, I still remember my first show. My first show ever was at Caroline's on Broadway in New York City. You've heard of it?
No.
You've heard of Caroline's?
But David might have. David's from New York.
It's a legendary comedy club. It's one of the meccas in New York City. You know, I took a class of an instructor and who I still speak to this day, and it was just one of those things that kind of, you know, you can get a few pointers how to be a comic, but then like I said, you just get thrown into the, you know, you get thrown out into the ocean, and that's kind of what it is. You do your first show. A lot of friends and family came because they all thought I was going to be famous. And they come and they support you. You crack a few jokes, and you know I got my first laugh right out of the box. My blood pressure got perfect. I was all set, you know, because I was really. I remember sitting backstage, my first show. My hands were like numb. I felt paralyzed, literally like I couldn't move. My mouth was as dry as a desert. I could not. I was so frightened. And I remember one of the other comedians and the other instructors giving me a wink, like, you're going to do good. And I'm like, do you see me right now? Do you realize I can't get a word out of my mouth? And I remember saying that. I remember saying, how could you possibly tell me I'm going to be okay? I can't move. I was so frightened. And I've never been that frightened since. And I'll never forget it. And then I went out. I made one of my first jokes, and they laughed. And all the pressure, I got relieved, and then it was a great show. To this day, I can remember it. I remember a lot of bits, word for word, and it was a lot of fun. But, Caroline's on Broadway. Great show. And I've only been there, I've been a couple times after that, and then after that, I haven't been there. So it shows you where my career is.
Yeah. Well, I absolutely love watching shows like Whose Line Is It Anyway? I mean, that show makes me laugh till I have tears coming down my face. Did you take those type of improv classes, or how did
you? I never took any improv classes or anything like that. What I started to dabble in maybe was just more of what they call, you know, in the very beginning was more just like going for tutelage with another comic. Just like I said, because you can you can get tips and pointers, but after a while you just have to write your material and then get on stage. There's no other way to become a better comedian than to just be on stage. Okay, I could sit here with Jerry Seinfeld, Ray Romano, Kevin James, all the best comedians in the world. They're not, you know, they could help me, but then you just got to get on stage, and that's what I was doing for a short period of time. And then I stepped away, which kind of like a lot of guys do, and it hurt me. And to this day, I'm doing well now, but, you know, to this day, I still look back and wish, but, you know, anyway.
Right.
So
now, how do you figure out what kind of comedian you're going to be, or is that just something that comes naturally? Because, you know, there's so many different types of comedy.
Well, natural is the way is one of the best compliments I get when people say, "Oh, you're a natural." Because and to be honest with you, I don't really try to be funny in any way. I always say my comedy is basically an extension of my personality. I think a lot of comics say it, but they're really not. I really truly feel like when I'm, because a lot of times when I'm around and I'm really on a roll, that's kind of how I, sometimes when I'm on a roll with friends or family or even with my wife, I always feel like I'm really in a groove the way I'm telling a story. And I always say, boy, I wish that's how I want to be when I'm on stage. That's the way it is, just ranting and just talking about my life and, you know, things that are funny to me. I'm not really a topical comic. I talk about my life, you know, my wife, my family, and things that are, you know, certain things. But that's really, it's just an extension of my personality. That's what I say. I don't want to ramble.
Well,
your show. Feel
free. Speaking of your family.
Yeah.
Speaking of your family, I watched the video with you talking about your son. And there I was laughing till tears were coming out of my eyes. So.
Oh, my God.
Dave, what did you say, Dave?
I was having water coming down my face, too. That was a riot.
Really? Oh, you mean the one of those clips on YouTube?
Yeah.
Oh, thank you. Yeah.
The one especially is it says how you fit in with the rest of the parents.
Yeah. When people ask me what's your plans for college, I said I'm 47. My plans to be alive.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the truth. Well, that's the interesting part of me. I mean, I started comedy. I was like 30 years old, 31 years old, and I started. You know, you're doing what you're doing, and then. If I had and I'm not even going to say I have a great work ethic now. I'm still lazy now, but if I had the mindset, but isn't that the way it is? Youth wasted on the young, you know, like if I had the mindset then that I have now, I would have been better. You know, back then it was like, well, if I'm not going to be on HBO tomorrow, what am I doing this for? Like, you know, what a dope, you know, I was so stupid. I want to go back and punch myself,
yeah.
You know, and even now, you know, and even now it gets frustrating and, you know, you know, if I had to fast forward right now, I mean, people go, oh, well, you do what you love. And, you know, nah, you know what? Don't even give me that much credit, I say. I do it because I feel like I can do it. I feel like I have an ability, you know. Can I get gooey on you? I'm like, oh, you know, if God gave me an ability, let me glorify him. I always feel, you know, if I can do it, because I truly feel I can do it. I feel like there's a lot of people that can't do it, and they do it, and, you know. But back then, it was more like like, remember how I was just knocking younger people, like they want this formatted way of living? Back then, I'm like, all right, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do this, and I better be on Leno or Letterman or I'm quitting. Like I was so stupid.
Right.
And that didn't happen right away. And then I ended up getting married, and then I'm like, all right, well, you know what? I don't need to do it. Like, I don't need to do it. And then it just passed. And years went by, and people would call me a comic, and they used to bother me. People were like, oh, talk to Gooch, he's a comedian. And then finally, after a few years, I talked to my wife. We didn't have any children, and I said, on our own. But I said, you know, I'm thinking of like making a comeback, like a comeback, like I'm Sinatra. But I was saying, you know, let me just try to get back into it. And then I got back into it, thinking, and it was also interesting because when I first started, I was really, really fat. I was like, I'm not that I'm perfect now, but I was like 375 pounds. I was huge. And that was always an easy way of making jokes. Fat, I always say, if you're gay, talk about being gay. You know, if you're fat, talk about, you know, if there are some deprecating things you could talk about, not that gay is deprecating, but I always feel like when a gay comic makes fun of himself, I think it's hysterical. Fat guy, anything. So I used to do that, and I'd get great laughs. But then I lost a lot of weight, and then I came back into the business, and now I'm like, you know, I could still lose weight now, but I wasn't this... I didn't walk out there and you didn't see like a blimp. So I had to revamp my act. And then my kid came. Then my kid came and I'm like, wait a minute. Now am I going to have a kid? Well, what am I doing? So that's really the dynamic of my act now. The middle-aged new dad kind of thing, you know, and the husband, the married thing, blah, blah, blah. So,
and what does your son think about you talking about him on stage?
Well, he doesn't think much yet because he's two. But I'm sure.
Oh,
I'm sure,
yeah, he's so young.
I'm sure.
He's
yeah.
So young.
All he thinks about is a new diaper change. But eventually, hopefully, he'll get to see me. But you know, yeah, you know, it's The way it is now, I couldn't have. It's perfect, actually, because you know it gives me a thing to talk about. Otherwise, I'd be searching for things. Right now, I'm kind of like living, you know, the dad, the wife, you know, and I still have parents and sisters, so I try to put them into the act. And you know, talking about my my co-star Eric, he always talks about writing. He says he writes every day, and really, as a comedian, if you're a good comedian. Another good comedian told me this once. He says, you know, if you're a good comedian, you're born to be a good comedian, but it's your job to write, and that's the truth. You know, you're naturally funny. God gave you that ability, but then you got to write, and that's you know, and Eric talks about that all the time. He says he writes every day, and it's very hard. It's very hard to sit down and say, all right, here's a topic. Let's try to make it into a joke. You know, because like you said, like Dave, you said, like you watch that stuff, you say it's funny, and you know, talking. But believe me, I didn't write that word for word. That it just you have to develop it. You know what I'm saying? So, like I said, feel free to jump in if I'm rambling. You know, it's your show. You can
Well, another video I wanted to bring up that was really funny was when you were in the car with your dad and you're singing, and your dad keeps looking at you like, "Where did I go wrong? What is wrong with this guy?" I swear, I almost peed in my pants.
What video was this? My dad?
You're singing with your dad in the car.
That was another comedian.
Oh, is it? Oh, okay. I thought it was your dad.
No, it was
another comedian. Well, he was looking at you like you had gone
up to the event or something.
It was funny.
His name is Vic DiBattato. He's a legendary guy. You know of him? You know the name?
No, I don't.
Mm-mm. All right, you got to Google Vic and you got to Google Caroline. No, but yeah, he's another great comedian. I've made some spoofy little videos with him, but it's kind of like how my father looks at me anyway, with that kind of let's put it this way, I don't talk about my parents enough. I really don't, because they're still in a like the first thing we talked about was the weather, you know, it's like those kind of things, those kind of stereotypes. That's my parents, you know, the things that they worry about that they should, you know. But on we go. So what else? What else you want to talk about?
Well, I maybe we should let David ask a question.
Come on, Dave.
Okay. What are the do's and don'ts about comedy, according to you?
Do's and don'ts. Well, definitely do is just keep, you know, the do's, you know, get on stage. Stand-up comedy, do it. Got to get on stage. You got to try to perform. Just talking to somebody recently, depending where you are in the business, get a good frame of mind. When you get a good frame of mind to know what you want and what you expect, you're a little happier. Because, like, a lot of times I wake up every day and I say, I want to be positive. And then I just get upset because I think maybe I'm expecting too much. So, just keep working and just try to be the best, funniest comedian you could be when you're on stage. Because at the end of the day, all the websites and all the tweeting and all the Facebook posts and all that nonsense as a comedian means nothing unless you're funny on stage. You may do a few things and here and there, and you may get some heat somehow and this and that. But eventually, if you're not funny on stage, everything just fizzles away. So that's what I try to always say. And believe me, as a comic, you're not always going to feel funny every day. You don't always have to be funny, but you better be funny for that time you're on stage, because that's your job, you know. And that's the most important. And as far as don't talk bad about other entertainers. Don't talk bad about other comics. You know, it's not right. I try to stay away from the negativity. I try not to not talk bad about people. You know, try to be. You know, they always whenever I talk to other people, I'll be like, all right, well, standard waiver. I don't want to say anything bad, but you know, because you know what goes around comes around. But
exactly.
There's more do's than don'ts, and just try to become, just write work, and just try to get on stage as much as you can. And get a good frame of mind. Get a good frame of mind. And say, you know, realize if you're really funny and why you're doing it. Are you doing it to make money? Are you doing it to be famous? You know. But you know, Dave, there's really no perfect black and white with the comedy. There really isn't. And a lot of comedians are doing comedy, and they don't even know if they're doing it to become an actor or they're doing it to become, you know, they could be doing it for other reasons, you know. You see some of the best comedians become, you know, sitcoms. So I don't know. Were they working towards that? I mean, if you ask me right now, why am I doing comedy? I still don't even know exactly. Like, am I looking to, do I want to keep doing this in 4 years if nothing else happens? I don't know. So, but that's the long version.
Yeah. Those are all good points, though.
Yeah.
Now, how did you come up with Gooch? I know that's not your real last name.
That's easy. That's the easiest question you've asked me so far. I'll probably give you the long version.
Oh, good.
No, not that you gave me hard questions. It's just that I could talk if you give me the floor. My last name is Gucciardo, like the designer. Gucci, A-R. One of my first jokes, actually, too. And people just call me Gooch. That's it. It's as simple as that. My father, he was Tommy Gooch, and my father spelled it G-O-O-C-H, and that was it. And when I started in the business, circa 2000, I went by Gucciardo. One of my first few things, and people would, before my first show, actually, people were misspelling my name. And one of the, a very important person, like I said, who I supposed to speak to today, he said, "What do people call you?" I go, "They call me Gooch." He goes, "Just go by Gooch." And that's it. And it's not a stage name. It's not a character name. If you know me 5 minutes, you're going to call me Gooch anyway, so.
Yeah.
So that's as simple. That's as simple as it is. You know, Tommy Gooch. Yeah, you call me Gooch, Tommy Gooch. But yeah, that's it. But the thing is, a lot of people, when they see the name, they know it's not really my name.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like you asked me that. Did you know that, or what? Did you just assume it? I'm just wondering.
I think I read it somewhere.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah. Oh, there you go. Yeah. Well, I think I have it on my website, my bio. Exactly. Yeah. Full disclosure. You know. Yeah. But
It probably makes it easier for people to introduce you too.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Because my name has been butchered my whole life. You know, my name is Gucci, and it's really easy too when you think about it. G-U-C-C-I is Gucci. Everybody knows that. And,
right.
But you add A-R-D-O and forget it. Then it's very hard for them to say. But
they fall
off
the deep end.
Yep. But that's pretty much it. It's not a stage name. It's just I'm Tommy Gooch. You know, I always say, listen, if you want to put me on, if you want to give me a sitcom or a television deal, you can call me Cleopatra. I really don't care.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I think that we have Eric Jacob on the line, so let me go ahead and pick this up.
Well, I don't know if I'm going to. I really don't want him calling into my show.
Hello.
No, you know what, Eric? I'm glad you called in because I couldn't shut up.
Can you hear me?
Yeah,
Tommy, your father told me to call. He wants you to go back to college and get your master's in accounting.
Wait a minute. Well, first I have to go back and answer one auditing question, right? Oh, my God.
Did you just say Illinois? I'm just asking. Really? You said Illinois?
Yeah, I said Illinois. It's like I'm the first person to say Illinois, you know?
Yeah, I don't remember the last one that did until today.
That was awesome. But it's one of those things where I always say it wrong, but I always correct myself afterwards.
I'm glad you called in.
Thank you. Because eventually they were going to talk about our series, and I had nothing to say about it. No.
There's a lot to say. There's
I could talk about myself, but I don't know if I was going to be able to talk about us. No, I'm actually.
I loved hearing about it. I loved hearing about your college experience.
Yeah, I figured they were going to ask about my bio. I always bring up college. I don't do any jokes on college, but I should. I would just say my father wasted his money. That's all. But, you know, I know you're going to ask Pam, but I didn't know Eric from a hole in the ground. I heard his interview and he said he knew of me, which is flattering. But I didn't know of Eric. I mean, I've been doing this longer.
Until the show.
Yeah, until the show. And then we did Surviving Sam, which is great, which I so hope comes out. If you've ever seen the pilot, the trail is great. There's some funny things going on, but some great stars. And I didn't even know who Eric was. And then we met up for this and you did the interview with him. He's a funny guy. It was a nice little click.
Yeah.
You guys want to take a break. Me and Eric could just keep talking.
Yeah, that's fine. I mean, I love those type of interviews when you guys take off like that. So.
No. Well, fire away. Go ahead, Pam. And Eric, stay. I'm so glad you called.
Oh, yeah. No, that's cool. No, it's good. I'm glad I called in. I was gonna call your whole family to see how they felt about.
Man, my niece. I'm supposed to play uncle and go see one of my nephew's games, but I said I'm doing a radio call in. So.
But, you're too famous to everybody.
Well, not anymore. Now it's like, you know, I tell people I'm playing somewhere and nobody cares. That's what it is. You know, and it's like, call me when I could put it on Channel 2 or something like that.
Yeah.
But anyway, so what else, Pam? What do you want to talk about? You want to talk about Surviving Sam? What's it going to take? You want to talk about?
Yeah. Well, go ahead and go on with Surviving Sam, since that was the first one you guys did together. Did you have any scenes together?
We didn't even have a cookie together. I didn't even know we were in it because I played his client's brother. You know, first of all, I got very lucky, like a lot of comedians. You know, I knew Tony Marcolini, who runs, she's partners in Plymouth Silvertree Entertainment. Adal, I went in. The best part is that, and there's other two great comedians who you interviewed, Rob Magnotti and Richie Minervini. And I actually, I listened to your interview with Rob and Alicia. It was outstanding. I even tweeted during, and you even mentioned me during the interview. I don't know if you remember that.
Yep.
She doesn't.
You can tell her. I got it. When you were interviewing Alicia and Rob, I was enjoying it, and I live tweeted it. But, anyway,
yes,
I basically, the role, it's, you know, it's about a husband and a wife who have been given a divorce by a judge who's played by Richie Minervini, and they're told that they get the divorce, but they got to live together. And I play the brother, and
I am in the opening scene. I am Alicia's attorney in the scene. In the opening scene, when Richie has them get divorced, I represent her side. So, and I'm like kind of that attorney. I'm like hitting on her a little, you know, flirting, but I am her attorney. So I'm in the opening scene, and then I never met Tommy until we started doing What's It Gonna Take. But continue with kind of what you're saying with the show.
Yeah. So really, my sister, who's played by Alicia Minshew. She wasn't going to have a brother. She was supposed to have a sister. The actress's name escapes me. My wife might be listening and ready to scream. Tyler something, whatever. Do you know who it was, Eric?
I don't know.
It was a lady.
What the sister's name was.
But anyway, she was supposed to have a sister character. And then within like 3 days, they said, you know what, let's make it a brother. And Tony calls me like on a Friday and says, listen, do you want to be part of this project? Blah, blah, blah. You can come in, you can read. I'm like, listen, you know, I'll clean your bathroom. What are you, out of your mind? This is like for a comedian to get a call to be casted, you know, and I knew I could do it. Every comedian feels they could do it. But the thing is, I had no time to prepare. You know,
shot it on Monday, and Sunday Tommy went to church for the first time in 20 years.
I mean, I got the script. She sends me the script on a Friday. I got my wife printing it out for me. And then I got to go on like, oh, maybe it was Tuesday or Monday. I think it was Monday. And I had, and you know, Tony was being sweet. And they're like, you know, don't worry. You just learn these three pages. These three pages. If I had to study three sentences in school, I didn't do it. You know, even as a comedian, my material, there's always that part as a stand-up comedian. When before you walk on, there's a line at a club I play at in Levittown, New York, in Governor's Comedy Club. There's a line right in the green room right before you walk on stage that says, don't worry, you'll figure something out. And as a comedian, as a live entertainer, in the back of your head, you always have that in your pocket. Say, all right, don't worry, you know, I'll figure something out because I'll play with the audience. I'll crack something off the cuff. But, you know, when you're filming a sitcom and you're giving a script, there's no wing in it. You got to do what's there. Maybe you can add, like, one word to tweak, you know. So I just didn't – I wasn't ready. Now I'm on – here I am, Tommy Gooch, this bald comedian, and I'm in a room with Alicia Minshew, who's been on All My Children, a famous actress, and she could have been sweeter.
She's done, like, 1,000 episodes, so she knows her lines. And, Pam, I'll tell you, Pam and Dave, if you see the outtakes – Tommy was awesome for getting the lines. It was awesome. he couldn't get the lines right.
Well, I felt bad, and I felt so bad because it would be like, you know, it'd be like, all right, Tommy Gooch, Alicia Minshew, Surviving Sam, blah, 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 take one, action. And I'd be like, nope, cut. I just couldn't.
No.
I couldn't. And they would actually take a break. And Alicia, to this day, like, so sweet. And she was like, "Are you?" She goes, "You've had 24 hours. Don't worry, don't worry." And I remember telling my wife, she's like, "Were you nervous? Were you sweating?" I go, "I wasn't even upset. I said I knew it was expecting a lot of myself." And then it got so bad, Pam. It got so bad. Whoever's listening, it got so bad that they literally cropped me in, and they kept the script next to me, and I'm almost reading the script while they're filming.
That's how bad
it got, where I could not remember a line. And what bothered me more afterwards is that was kind of a scene where they wanted to really establish the character of the brother and the sister. And Tony and Maria, who were so sweet, obviously, they said it came out good enough. You know, I haven't seen the full pilot, you know, and so going forward, hopefully, you know, we'll see how it goes. But acting and really getting the script and having to remember your lines, I mean, anyone who says, you know, "Oh, acting, no problem," believe me, get your first script and memorize all those lines, you know.
Tony and Maria are the ones that sent the recommendation letter to college for your masters.
Thank you very much.
I'm teasing.
But I got through it, and then we filmed another scene, and we got through it, and we did well with it, and they couldn't have been happy with the pilot. And then as all things in this business, boom, there comes a red light, and there became an issue. But I mean, they have the platform that they want to put it on. It could be on Silvertree Entertainment, like all web series and all. And but the thing is, you know, they got to figure out the funding to continue filming it. So
it'll go.
Yeah, but they don't want to do it, and hopefully, you know, good things come to those who wait. Hopefully, that they're not rushing it. Not that they're not rushing it. They're not looking to do it in a cheesy way, you know, so we'll see. But yeah, through that, that's how I met Eric. So he had done his scene before I even got in, you know, so.
Did I shoot my scene before you shot yours?
I think you did, yes.
Okay.
I think you did. And they couldn't have been more, they couldn't have been, you know, Pam, they couldn't have been easier too. They would even ask me, you know, there'd be a line and they'd be like, "Well, how would you say it?" Like, and I said, "Well, I have a sister." And they, "Well, how would you tell this to your sister?" And I said, "I would say," like, there was a line that say, "I'm going to kick you in your butt." And I kept flubbing it. And like, I was flubbing all the lines. And they go, "Well, how would you tell your sister?" I say, "Well, listen, Annette, I will smack you in your ass." And they go, "Do it just like that." And boom, I got it in one take. I got it. It was, you know, not that that's the science to acting, to just let the comedian say what they want, but it just worked with me right there.
Yeah.
There's nothing. I mean, if you have a comedian who's really delving into acting for the first time, to liberate him and let him, like, let his personality come out, that's great, and that's what they did.
If the character pertains to that, you know.
Yeah, like I said, I'm not saying that's the science to everything exactly.
Yeah.
So.
Well, do you think it would have been easier if they let you be Sam's sister and they let you wear a dress and a wig?
Eric would have liked that. I can tell you that, because there's definitely, believe me, Eric would have liked that.
Yeah. I'll tell you what. There's an episode in our show, What's It Gonna Take? There's one of the things Tommy loses a bet, and he has to dress up kind of like a girl, and he wears what do you have on your head? Like a sash?
Are we giving that away? That's the kickboxer.
No.
Right?
Okay. After the kickboxer. Well, it's in the coming. It's in the trailer, and and it says bride to be. He's dressed up like a female.
I think there was a pink ribbon around your head.
Yeah.
There you go. Yeah.
It was something like that. So Tommy's used to that. Tommy's used, you know.
Yeah.
To put him through things like that. He's comfortable with femininity.
I was all right. I was just. We kept trying to think of a good spoofy thread, and everything kept coming back to me wearing a ribbon or something, some sexual innuendo Eric kept pushing, so we just went with it.
Yeah.
It's funny. It was funny. The only thing that I have to prove to Eric in the next year, hopefully we keep working, is that he's in better shape than me. I think he's getting thrown for a loop that, you know, just because I'm, like, maybe a little heavier than him, like, we have to straighten that one out.
Yeah, we did an episode.
I'm getting
of
a little
out.
Dull that I'm getting. He's in better shape than me, but we'll work that out. Though we're gonna do a full kickboxing class. We're gonna see what happens.
Are you working out? You getting in shape now? Huh?
No, I want to lose 30 pounds like you. Have you kept it off? I haven't seen you in a.
Yeah. I'm losing more. So I've been getting in shape just for other acting
good
stuff.
For you.
So I have to, tone up.
Like I said, Pam, feel free to jump in whenever you want, hon.
Yeah.
It's your show.
Well, Eric, tell us something about Tommy that we don't know and would be surprised to hear.
Since you worked with him, what's it going to take?
But, you know, I'll tell you what, it's funny because Tommy, you know, he seems very mellow, and all of a sudden sometimes he'll just say something that just pops out that you're not expecting. So, he's, you know, he seems like nothing's really bothering him, and he's just talking. And we did a scene, there was an episode where I was a waiter in a restaurant, and he shows up with these women, and they don't, he knows me, and they don't know that I know him. So I'm pretending I'm a waiter, and it's this whole big gag going on. But he was going along with some things, and some of the things I don't want to give it away. But in the episode, he just said stuff, and it was very funny. Because a lot of it was improv there, being the comedian. So I wasn't expecting it. It was really our first day working together. So I'm doing my thing, and, you know, worried about what's going on. And then he's doing his thing, and it was definitely, it was cool, but it was shocking. I don't want to give it away, but it's very funny when I'm the waiter, and he's I'm kind of screwing around with him, pretending I don't like I don't like him, and I'm telling the women what a scumbag he is, and this and that, and I don't like him.
No.
It's very funny how we're trying to play gags on each other, and I guess on radio it doesn't sound as funny, but I just don't want to give it away.
Well,
it's,
I can picture it in my head. I'm good at that.
Yes.
So yeah.
Gotcha. No, so that's what was. I'll tell you, it was surprising because he is, you know, it's. You know, he's very relaxed and nonchalant, and all of a sudden he'll just come out with something, and you're like, oh, that's really funny. And then you got to stay in your game, and like, I don't want to laugh. You know, that's one of the things, because it was, you know, a lot of the cameras were hidden kind of thing. So, and I know sometimes Tommy, my favorite thing to do for Tommy is to break him in a scene and make him laugh. Like, that is one of my favorite things. You know, we were making pizzas, and I just went off on doing, gluten-free pizza and, you know, cheese and all that stuff and non-dairy cheese. And he just was laughing. And that's one of my favorite things to get him to do.
That's actually the funniest thing. To this day, that's one of the funniest ways to make me laugh. I just love that element of, how can I say it?
The surprise.
Yeah, but no, more of just spoofing on someone and they don't know what's going on. That cracks me up, you know.
Or the yoga pants.
Yeah, yeah, but that's more of like a shock thing, one, two, three. I'm talking about, like, you know, there's a scene, you know, where you're just spoofing on a person and you're dragging it along as much as possible. I'm still trying to figure out where I come across as mellow to Eric, but I want to...
No, in that scene...
Oh, no, because I'm happy about that. I'm happy about that.
Yeah, no, it came across, you know, but... So when we were making pizzas, Pam and Dave, I'll tell you, the gentleman there is a real Italian guy, like, really, you know, and he's old school Italy... has this pizza place, and he's teaching us to make pizzas. And I'm going in now. I've never made a pizza, and I'm just telling him. And I was like, "Is this gluten free?" He's like, "What the hell is gluten free?" I mean, he has no clue. You know, I'm like,
if you see some of the stills, I'm really, really laughing, and I'm telling you, not creative. I was sweating. I don't even think he understood the word gluten. But then again, he should. But he had, you know, it was just funny. It was just naturally
and then
funny.
Yeah, and then I'm going on. He's like, "What?" And he's getting mad. And I'm like, "Is this what kind of cheese is this?" He's like, "Yeah, it's cheese, mozzarella cheese." And I was like, "I got to go non-dairy, you know." And he's like, "What?" And I was like, "It's my allergies." And it was great.
That poor guy.
You know, Tommy. The guy's getting pissed off. Tommy's laughing. You know, he's a real Italian guy, and I'm just keeping a total straight face. And I loved it because that was like the first. That was really the first thing me and Tommy did. And he's turning away, and I'm like, "What's going?" You know, it was a lot of fun, you know, especially we're trying to bust on this guy, you know, the Italian guy. So it was a lot of fun.
Then there's the scene where Eric has the great line with it. The girl keeps questioning Eric. He's playing the waiter, and she keeps trying to override him. Well, I got to talk to this person. And she's like, "Well, let me talk to the manager." He goes, "Well, I'm the manager." Like, he just...
I turn away for a second. I turn away and I come back, and she's like, "Can I help you?" And I was like, "Can I help you?" She goes, "No, I want the manager." I said, "Well, I'm the manager."
I'm the manager. Like, there's nothing she could have done to get him away. We're kind of butchering it and laughing like dopes right now, but it's funny.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully when you see it, it's funny. But
yeah.
Anyway.
Well, the trailer is hysterical, so yeah. I can't wait for the rest of it.
Yeah, no, it was a lot of fun. And that's what, you know, Tommy goes along with it. It's great. Me and him, considering the fact we met right while shooting it, we got along great. We clicked. it was really natural. It was a lot of fun. And like I said in an interview, and Tommy just said, you know, Tony and Maria made it very easy to work together with all of us, you know, creatively. It was a lot of fun. It just made it, you know, it flowed very easy.
For sure.
And then,
Dave, wake up. Is he over there, Dave? How's he doing?
Yeah.
I'm here.
Is he next to you, Pam, or what is he?
No, he's in New York. I'm in Illinois.
Oh, you're in
different
Illinois.
Cities.
Yeah.
Oh. Illinois, as Tommy.
He's in Illinois. Okay. So where's Dave in Sioux City, Idaho? Where is he?
He's in New York.
Oh, in New York. Oh, cool. All right. So, Dave, you've heard of Caroline's, right?
No, I don't think I have.
And you live in New York? Where in New York do you live? Buffalo?
Well, I'm on the other end. I'm east of Buffalo.
Okay. All right. We'll get there.
Gotcha. Okay. Okay. Gotcha.
All right. All right. We'll get there. All right. Enough about that. So what else there, Pam?
So your show, What's It Gonna Take, is kind of like a candid camera thing.
A little bit, and the more, a lot of it actually, the more, you know, hopefully if we keep going and funding gets good and we can add more hidden cameras and stuff like that, then it's going to become even better, you know. You know, you also, you know, there's some topics and premises we want to use, but we also, you want to keep it natural without getting arrested, you know. You don't want to, because there are things you can do to strangers and then, you know, you can get in trouble for doing. But then the thing is, if you tell them ahead of time, then their reaction's not natural. So it's...
You know, it is like a candid camera in the sense of what you're saying. Traditionally, you know, we're spoofing on people. One of the things is we break down the fourth wall, as they call in theater, when we talk to the audience or we talk to the camera while it's going on. You know, and that's a big difference. You know, candid camera, they just... You know, only at the end would they, you know, they'd point to the camera and the people would laugh, go, ha,
right.
ha, ha, you know, that kind of thing. No, we're talking to the camera even like before it or even sometimes during it. If I know, I'll know where one of the hidden cameras are and I could even like look at it and give like a little wink or just I'll walk over to it quick and I'll say something if no one's near it, you know, and that's what's kind of, it does a little twist because, you know, it's almost like the audience is in on it with me. Like they're there with me instead of just like looking at it from a spectator point of view. They're like, I'm telling them, like, I'm going to do this now. You know, instead of they're surprised, they're waiting. They know what's going to happen because I told them or Tommy told them, you know, and we invite them in even before the show. We set it up being like, this is what we're going to do instead of it just happening. And you're watching, we're going to we kind of tell you what we're going to do, what we're going to or what we're going to try and do because it doesn't always succeed, you know, and then. So I think that's what makes it slightly different, or not even slightly, it definitely makes it different, breaking down the fourth wall, as we say in show business. So, you know, and you know, the traditional, and there's a lot of shows like, Candid Camera that does that, but doesn't break down the fourth wall, and you're just watching, waiting to see, and you're kind of shocked, like, oh, is that supposed to be what's funny? But we kind of let you in on it sometimes. That's it.
You know what he means by that, Pam?
Yes, I do. Yes, because I'm thinking about Betty White's show and stuff like that. Yeah, there's quite a few of them out there that do it in different ways. So
yeah.
Either way, it's funny.
Exactly.
Just a little bit,
I mean,
just once in a while. Even like in Ferris Bueller, when he looked at you just once in a blue moon. It makes you feel like you're in on it for a split second, you know?
Yeah, well, Annie Hall, they did that. Ferris Bueller, there's movies here and there. Throughout time that, you know, they'll just break it down and, you know, they'll look at it and you're like, ah, that's, even Mel Brooks did that sometimes, I think, in History of the World, you know, you look at it, he's like, it's good to be the king, you know, and that kind of stuff.
Well, I have to say, like I told Eric, one of the funniest scenes that I've seen so far in the trailer is when he's getting his underarms waxed. And Tommy, you're right there wanting to pull that. I mean,
it was right
did
up
that
my
come
alley.
Up suddenly,
that whole scene,
or,
it was right up my alley. I'm all for people like getting like where I can just sit there and kind of enjoy it. I mean, and it was unplanned also because we were filming
you
in
were
the yoga
hysterical.
Place.
I mean,
we were filming in the yoga place, and then we just said like, let's, you know, we put our heads together, and then we went over and asked them.
I had no idea that day what was going to happen. And then literally, like, within the 5 minutes before, they're like, oh, we're going to go to the waxing place. And it was, like, two doors down. So I walk in, they're like, you're going to have your armpits waxed.
Yeah.
And I was not happy. And the guy, and who's your friend again that owns the yoga place?
Eddie Cordiano.
Yeah. Eddie was so funny, and he's like, this will be one of the most painful things you will ever have in your life.
Yeah.
He's like, and I love it. And he was hysterical laughing. He was there with us, and it was so painful, but it was very funny.
Yeah.
Very funny, you know. And
A lot of fun. They were good. They were good sports too. Unplanned, like I said, we didn't think that was, we didn't think our the shooting was going to end that day there, but it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, no, it was cool. And then, sorry, what was that?
I was going to ask Tommy. I mean, how funny was it for you to be able to do it, just to jump in and do it? And I mean, Eric was freaking out.
I enjoyed it. I think like it kept. There was even the one time where I pulled it too. I wanted to do it, and I think I butchered it a little bit. But yeah, I pulled off one of his skin tags too. He had a couple of those skin tags.
No, I didn't know.
Oh, no.
And he kept saying that. And we get into an argument about it. And
what?
Point, like, I was mad. I told the woman, I forgot her name. And I was like, do not let Tommy pull the bandage, or, you know, the thing off to wax.
Yeah.
She's like, no. And he's like, I'm going to do it. And if you watch it, I'm arguing, and then he does it, and I just screamed. And I'm like, it's pain. It's, you know, as a lot of women know, getting waxed, especially the first time, let alone on your armpits, it's not an easy, you know, it's not an easy pull.
No.
At all.
No, it's not. Eventually you get used to it, but
And I thought each I thought each armpit was like one time. I had no idea it's like multiple times each armpit. And I was like, that's it. I was like, we're keep going? She's like, we're not done. I was like, you serious?
Eric, did you say you had like ice bags under your arms like that night or something like that?
That night, oh God, I had to. I was like, my armpits were swollen. Remember, I couldn't, there's a video of me walking out and my arms are like out because I just couldn't put my arms down. Armpits were sore and one of them was all black and blue and bruised. But
that is just,
yeah.
It's funny, but I feel your pain.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah. And they wanted to keep waxing me everywhere else. I was like, I'm not getting waxed everywhere else. They're like, oh, no, you can keep going. I said, I'm done. Thanks.
You got to save some for Tommy. Tommy's got to be next to do that. So.
Oh, definitely. Oh, definitely.
Thanks, Pam. I appreciate
it. He knows it's coming. He knows it's coming.
Thanks you for your input on what's it going to take.
Well, you know, Pam, we'll fly in from Chicago. You can come watch it.
Okay, that's a deal. Maybe I'll even help.
Yeah.
I don't have as much hair as Eric, and I'm Italian, too, and I don't have as much hair. So.
Yeah, I know.
But anyway, so you're going to like, it's like all the things on the Silver Tree, they have all the different things that when you subscribe to, and for $4.99, you know, I'm not a good, I'm not one of those good like people like to lobby to, oh, you got to buy this and do this. But when you do think about $4.99, just to watch one of them is worth it. But then you get all of the subscriptions, you know, with the all of them, you know,
it's Silver Tree Entertainment.
I don't want to butcher it. I don't, because we haven't really said it. It's Silver Tree, but then it's ST. What is it? Silver
the
Tree Originals, right? What is that, Eric?
But they can find it at Silver Tree Entertainment.
Yeah, but then it takes you to STE Originals. Is that what that is?
Yeah, I think that's what it is.
They could find it there.
Yeah, and like I said, $4.99 for what's it going to take is worth it. So, but I was happy when they were going to put in the Italian Kitchen and all of those things on there. So, you know, there's a lot of good, funny stuff. So, and what's good is, like, you know, you may want to go for the Italian Kitchen, and then you could stumble across what's it going to take, and you may like that. Or you might just go for the comedy, and you might fall into the Italian Kitchen. So just... Well, you know, who knows? You can get lucky. So we'll see what happens.
There's a bunch of stuff there. Always just check it out, though. Silver Tree Entertainment.
Yeah, comedy and food are my two favorite things to watch on TV. So this is, like, perfect for me. And just for our listeners, go to SilverTreeEntertainment.com to watch it. What's It Gonna Take? And there's Surviving Sam trailer. Also, shows like Dining with Chef Marty, Stand Up Laughing, The Italian Kitchen, and so much more. So check it out. You won't be sorry you did.
Yes,
no,
absolutely.
Definitely.
And then obviously the one big thing of Surviving Sam will be, that'll be coming soon, hopefully, and that'll be that's going to be the real big thing on Silver Tree Entertainment, because that once that goes, you know, I'm not minimizing anything else, but that's going to be some product there. Hopefully, I think we got like 6 to 8 episodes we could film. It's just going to be great. So, But well, anyway,
there's a lot of stuff on the website. There's also books and there's music, and it's just there's there's authors. There's a ton of different things. So it has a gamut of you know, not just, you know, television or films, you know, movies kind of things. It's, you know, obviously television has web series, but it also has, you know, and different genres, as Tommy was saying, but also books and music and everything. So there's a lot.
Yeah, there's a little
there.
Something for everybody.
Exactly. So it's silvertreeentertainment.com.
And Tony and Maria have been really working hard, so I got to give them credit. Full disclosure, I mean, they're the ones who run Silvertree. You know, this is like, you know, they have other live, they have, you know, they're lawyers, and they've been working really hard at this. I'll just say that. So I'm really, you know, this sounds so cliche, but I'm really, really blessed to know them and work with them. And I don't mean that to be gooey. I'm just saying they're really, really cool.
You're being
really
Gucci.
What?
You're being like Gucci instead of gooey.
Yeah.
You're Gucci.
Well, but, you know, it's just, I'll let him get the joke. See, I let him joke like that, but then I let it go. It's just, but no, because as a comedian, you need to get, like, lucky once in a while, and I got lucky with this right now. You know, even if nothing comes of it, you know, we've had some fun, and who knows. But I really hope something really, I really hope successful with all those subscriptions. I hope this is successful, at least with one of them that keeps it going. And I really, really hope Surviving Sam takes off. I mean, I know they're all funny. What's it going to take is hysterical. They're all going to keep going. It's just a matter of the audience seeing it and you know, and really buying into it. So.
Yeah. And I agree with what Tommy said. And I said this last time when I was on about, you know, Tony Maria. And it's like I said, the big thing, which is one of the important things for me is just the creativity that they allow us while, whether it's on set or on location or just even behind the scenes of allowing our input and just, you know, we're not just another actor kind of or comedian to them. It's just, we're part of the project, which makes it exciting, fulfilling creatively. There's a lot to it. And, you know, they put their work in, we put our work in, everybody does, you know, we're trying to, you know, get it done and move forward to the next project, you know, and that's what's great about it. You know, it's going to happen. It's just about which entity of it.
And any attention for this just helps, like, especially like guys like me and Eric and even Rob or Richie, is that we're comics. So, you know, and even bonus for people, like if they watch What's It Gonna Take and they like a couple of the episodes, and they can say, like, oh, wow, geez, the guy Gooch, Eric, they're comics. Oh, I can go see them some other places. So it's just it can all just keep, you know, just an artery of good things that could happen. So.
Yeah, and I have a film coming out of my stand-up that I just shot. So that should be coming out within the next 6 weeks. So I'm looking forward to, we're editing that right now. So I'm very excited about that.
Well, and vice versa, too. If people, you know, see you in a club, do you ever mention, you know, about your What's It Gonna Take web series or Surviving Sam or something? Like, you can get people, you know, out in the audience that may not listen to you online and get them to go online and listen to it.
From time to time, I do. I mean, I don't do it all the time because, I mean, now, past couple of times I've been doing What's It Gonna Take, because a lot of times I don't want to, you know, Surviving Sam isn't a definite yet. It's going to be in our hearts. I know it's going to happen. But, you know, in terms of credits, I mean, I always tell people to go to my website and everything is there. Just I give them pretty much of what I'm doing. So I'm always.
I have no shame with that. I tell everybody.
I don't even say it's shame. I don't even mean it that way.
No, I mean plugging myself. I have no shame plugging myself. You know, I make sure when I'm being announced.
I've been doing this a little longer, and I always get dull with that. Pam, being a comic, no matter where you are, people always go, what do you want me to say about you? Sometimes I get funny, and I say stupid. I go, well, just tell them, you know, Seven Lettermans, and, you know, I go, just say a funny guy. Because a lot of comedians, they're more, remember I was talking to you before, Pam, and I don't know if Eric was listening, more comedians, they're worried about their website and their YouTube channels, and they're not just worried about being funny, and, you know, they're worried about more about their credits. I've worked with some comedians who have done, like, three shows, like, and they're more important about, and they're worried more about what the host
is being about.
Yeah, I mean, it really, come on. So,
I look at it as two things. You know, when you're a comedian, you're going on stage, you did your work ahead of time. But like I said, you know, I have no shame plugging myself, meaning like I'll have the announcer say, you know, and it's the funny thing that they're giving Tommy credit also. They'll say he's currently in a new web series starring with Tommy Gooch, you know, called What's It Gonna Take? Mm-hmm. I always say that. You know, I always want them to keep seeing me when I leave. And it's not, you know, I look and it's, you know, me and Tommy, we have the same outlook, but slightly different in the sense of like, I'll always want to plug it for me and, you know, for just so they can keep seeing me, you know, mm-hmm. and they can keep seeing the project so I can keep working.
Yeah,
and
I'm probably to a fault where I should do it more. So I'm going to do that. I got to know.
Are you going to be writing tomorrow?
I mentioned Pam. I heard you. You heard me. Okay. As long as you know, I gave you credit. All right.
I know.
This is the truth. The truth.
I did my writing today already. You know,
there
my
you
homework
go.
Every day.
Okay. It's the truth. And believe me, and I'll quote another great comedian. I always said it. You know, you're born with certain abilities, but you know, it's your job to write because
it's like going to the gym. Nobody wants to go to the gym every day. You know, but
no. Well, the thing is this: you got to remember this, and Pam, and this is the truth. As a comedian, you're born with two abilities: one to perform. You're also born with the ability to see things that the people don't see it in a certain way. You understand? And
mm-hmm,
and you have the
yeah.
ability to exude and portray it to an audience, but you can't just see it and say it and it's hysterical. The job you have to do is to construct it into something where I can make you as a joke. You understand what I'm saying? That's
mm-hmm.
the job.
Yeah.
Otherwise,
yeah.
you're born with the ability, you know, to see things. And, you know, there's always that thing, comedy and tragedy. You know, they say, oh, comedy comes from tragedy. Yeah, I've always said, I don't really truly feel it's from tragedy. I like to see it more as from frustration. Like, comedy, at least that's how I come from. I mean, but then again, there are comedians that have been through hell and back, and they talk about it, and it's funny. So, yeah I mean, I talk about, one of my great bits is how I had a baby and I had to do in vitro fertilization. And my wife and I went through hell to have a baby. And if you would have told me years later it'd be one of my best 10 minutes, I would have never thought it. So, yeah, you see it in a different way. And the job is to make it a joke. Let Eric say something because he's dying to say something right now. So
me and Pam and David, we talked about it. No, we talked about that last time when I talked about with my dad's Alzheimer's. You know, it's just there's a part you sometimes – you're not always looking for the tragedy in it, but you know, we are as humans live life through things such as, I know Pam with your father, and I'm sorry, I hope he feels better mm-hmm. soon, but you know, sometimes you may just laugh at something that happened at the hospital. You know, at times mm-hmm. it's very hard, but sometimes you look back, but that was kind of funny. And if somebody could, and sometimes there may be a comedian that writes something in a couple of years, you may laugh at them. So yeah, I get it. I get that point.
Well, you might not even laugh at it then, but you saw it that way. And then when you sit
exactly.
down, and you're like, and then all of a sudden, you acknowledge it in a different way, and then you make it into a joke. Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's just the way it is. It's the truth.
I don't
do more of it. I should do more. You know, we have to, you know, because we definitely see things in ways that other people. There's no doubt. Even Seinfeld said it. Seinfeld says, you know, as a comedian, you just see the world differently. That it's actually a torture that you're living in the same world because you just see things differently. It's really the
yeah.
truth.
Yeah.
That's why a lot of comedians are tortured souls, because we just see things a lot differently. And, you know, we don't accept certain things, and then we do accept certain things. And it
yeah.
just drives us crazy, you know. The way it is.
Either Jerry Seinfeld or Chris Rock said, I saw them talking to each other in an interview. They interviewed each other, and they said they were born with the gift to be able to talk to 1,000 people at one time. And they said, do you realize how crazy that is?
Dave, wake up. Pam, you still there?
Yeah, I'm listening.
I think it was on Comedians in Cars Having Coffee. They talked
about Jerry Seinfeld actually said, first of all, he lives his whole life every day as a vacuum. He's trying to always look like, in an interview with Howard Stern, he says he's always trying to, every day he's just, everything he looks at, he's trying to twist it into a joke. He's like, how it looks to him into a joke. That's what he said. Yeah, and Chris Rock said that, and it was actually to this day I think of that. Chris Rock said that silence is okay. He goes, when you're talking to an audience of 1,000 people, you're not always going to, you know, they're not going to be laughing every second. The silence can be intimidating, but if you have their silence, that means you have their attention. You know,
Makes sense.
So in other words, if you have their now, and the way he now, you know, the way Chris Rock talks, he'd be like, "You better come up with a punchline. You better have a." But if you have a punchline, and you know you got it, it's great because you have their attention. You got them at the edge of their seat, and boom, you give them the punchline, and it's great. But a lot of comedians, and I suffer from this too, and I used to more, is that when you hear that silence, it gets very intimidating. So what you do is you start rushing on stage, and you rush to your punchline because you're like, they're not laughing. I got to make them laugh. Instead, the silence is okay. You have, you know, what silence is okay on stand-up because you have their attention. When you have the mumbling and the chattering, then now you lost their attention. Now they're doing other things besides looking at their iPhones. So, but I'm glad Eric brought up, because those are two great points. That's Seinfeld. I mean, the Chris Rock thing is huge, because there's no doubt, you know, when to have that much to get that many people's attention, it's so true.
Well, Tommy, I'm sure this has happened to you, and Pam, you'll hear it. Interesting. As a comedian, so many people I was friends with in high school that were funny, they're like, oh, I can be a comedian. I'm like, okay, go do it.
Oh yeah. Well,
you know, it's they'll be like, "Oh, I'm funny." I'm like, "Okay, go. I'll put you in a room with just 25 people that are looking directly at you."
Every comedian's heard that. It's like
what I'm saying. And you're like, "Okay, then just do it." Like, don't tell me you could do it. And you know what? There's people that can. But like, someone once said to me, if you take 100 people, 25 of them could probably sing. But of that 100 people, maybe 2 of them can do stand-up comedy. Like, it's not just intimidating. There is an art form to be able to just like get up in front of people that are staring at you to tell a joke and for them to laugh. There's so many factors going into it. So it's, you know.
Oh, there's no doubt. That's why a lot of comedians have an ego. That's why we wear this badge. We have this brotherhood because we know what we're going into.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's just because we know what we do is special, you know. You know that old thing where they took a poll and the top 10 things that people are scared to do, and they actually said that people rather die than talk in front of other people.
Yeah.
Think about
that. That's me.
All right. So, and think about that. But then on every given night, I got to go up in front of 100 people and make them laugh. You know what I'm saying? So, But, you know, I'm not even going to sit here and say that is like such an intimidating thing anymore. The more you do it, the more, I mean, there are shows I do now that I look back and I say, my God, 5 years ago, I would have been frightened to death, or I would be like, I'm going to die. And now it's more like, you know what, I'm just going to do what I got to do. And you know what, I'm still going to go home to my wife and son. So it's like, you know, you just, now you get to a point where you don't want to screw up because someone could be watching you, and you never know, this could be the thing, you know. It used to be like, oh, I better do this or I'm going to be embarrassed. No, that's you get past that. Now you know, basically, you're going to get through it. It's just a matter of who's watching, or the timing could be there where that one person could be watching you, and that could be the time where you screwed up and you don't want that to happen. You know what I mean? So,
Pam, if you don't mind, I want to ask Tommy a question. Tommy, so what do you get scared of doing stand-up now? What scares you now?
I'll give you something that I learned. I'll give you something, the preparation. The difference between, I heard this as a sports analogy, but it's so true, and I've talked to other comedians about this. The difference between believing you're good and knowing you're good, here's the difference. When you know you're good, you know you put in all the work, okay? And my biggest concern now is like, I just know I'm not razor sharp on all these jokes. I know I should have 2 more bits. And so, in other words, that's kind of, I mean, using the word scared, I mean, it's not a good line. You know, it's more of like a concern it's more of a concern for myself of what I put more pressure on myself is to be prepared more with my jokes. Otherwise, you know, you go out there with your act and you got to hope they're buying into you. 9 out of 10 times when I come done with a show or I'm done, my wife would be like, how'd it go? And I'd be like, they loved me. They were buying into me. Because you got to get the audience to believe in you and buy into you. That's how it's.
Yeah.
So, are you there, Pam?
So it's preparation. So it's preparation for you. What's
scary? Oh, there's no doubt. There's no doubt. It's preparation. That's the biggest thing. Because what bothers me or what concerns me more is the constant, you know, just to keep making more jokes. You know, You know, I get a rap where, oh, I play with the crowd and I'm good with the crowd. And I mean, that's a natural thing. That always comes natural to me. But then the jokes are the things that we talked about. You got to write, you got to create them, you know? So,
yeah.
That's
all. Well, let me ask you this, both of you. I mean, when you work one club more than once, do you change up your jokes or do you stick with a certain routine?
I'll go first on that because that bothered me in the very beginning. That would bother me. Be like, well, that's when you're so new. You'd be like, well, this person's seen me. I got to do a different joke. Now I have people that have seen me dozens of times and have seen me do the same joke. You know, I changed some of my jokes, but they've seen me do it, and they still laugh at it. That's just the way it is. They're still going to laugh at it, and you know, and even if you do, let's say I do a show on Friday at a club, and there's 100 people, and 5 people came to see me. I wish a lot of people coming to see me. I'm like the most popular comic that don't draw anybody. I played a Borgata. I can't even get my mother and father to come. But I'm just saying, But I'm just saying is that if I have 100 people, if I'm 100 people in the audience, and 10 people were there to see me, and they saw my joke, and then I play another club, and 5 of those 10 people are there to see me again, it doesn't bother me. But I can assure you this: no matter who's watching you, every comedian is always looking to better the material and come up with the next joke. That's what they're all trying to do.
Yeah.
I mean, you do what's good. You do your best jokes, but at the end of the day, every day we're waking up trying to think of that next best joke. I could assure you that.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sure.
For me. I just did a stand-up film. Everything I performed that night is retired now, because once it goes on to film, I retire it. But I had that material for a year, but every night I perform, if I was doing a Friday and Saturday and two on Saturday, I'll probably, and let's say I'm doing, just say I'm a middle and I'm doing 20 minutes or something, or I'm an opener and doing 20 minutes. Let's just say I'm doing, you know, and it's like six routines. 4 of them will be pretty consistent, or 3 of them will be, and each show I'll change 2 or 3 of them around. For me, I need to do that for me. And I have, you know, I probably have 2 hours of material that I could use. And like Tommy said, and I said, I write every day. I need, for me personally, creatively, I need to add new stuff to see if I'm still on, if I'm funny. If, you know, like if I don't write for a day or two, I'll notice the difference. If I don't write for a week or two, you know, my wife and my friends would know the difference. And if I don't write for a month or two, the audience knows the difference. You know, that's what happens.
Yeah.
You just get sloppy.
Yeah.
So, you know, and that's the reality of it. So I like to change stuff up for me. It keeps it fresh. It keeps me charged. It keeps me on edge. And as a comedian going on stage, you need to be a little nervous, because otherwise then you get complacent. And if you're not nervous to perform, then you shouldn't be performing. You know, because then it's not special enough. That's how I look at it. You got to be a little, you know, then you get, if you're not nervous, then you're too cocky and you think you're better than it. And that's when you bomb. I've been there and I bombed. You know, you go up and you're like, I know. No, it's true. You're like, I can wing this. You know, and that was before I considered myself quote unquote professional. You know, now I go up there and I'm, you know, I do all my work ahead of time. You know, by the time it's, you know, Michael Jordan would say it, most of the work is done in practice. You know, by the time you're on stage, you should know your routine backwards.
Well, that's what I said about the work, and that's
totally. That's what I'm saying, and that exactly. I'm not, you know, but and that's the thing. So when you go up there, it should be really easy. But I like to be a little nervous, because as long as it doesn't paralyze you, you know, that you're a little nervous, because it keeps you alert. You know, just because somebody, because like Tommy said, you know, all of a sudden somebody could say something in the audience, and you got to be able to. You want to react to them sometimes. And then if not, then you could go back to your routine and you're not thrown, you know? So, but I like to change it around back to the question. Bringing it back around.
Yeah. And believe me, Pam, there's also a level of stand-up comedy, which neither myself or Eric have even come close to. You know, I'm still, you know, I'm obviously a little deeper than Eric is, but a real working comedian is working the road every weekend, and he's working, you know, 4 nights, you know, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, multiple shows, and I'm not even close to that level yet. I'm not fortunate enough to got to that level. So believe me, you know, Eric and I can shed light on things, but there's still things in this business that that I haven't even come close to experiencing yet, which I hope to someday, you know. So, you know, we like I said, we could shed light on a few things, but there are things that, believe me, hopefully you interview me in a year or two and I'll have more input. But, you know, when you hear of comics that are on the road, you know, for months and months at a time, you know what I'm saying? I'm gone for 48
right.
hours. I miss my son to death, my wife and kid. I want to come home, you know. There's road stories. I mean, so like I said, you know, we could shed off. It's not like you're talking to two of the most, you know, you're not talking to two veterans here of comedy, but we definitely are shedding light on things.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we're not Chris Rock and Jerry Seinfeld.
Yeah. Like when you interview Chris Rock and Jerry Seinfeld, they're not going to be quoting Eric Jacob and Tommy Gooch, I can tell you that, but.
They may be in a couple of years.
Hopefully.
Maybe in a couple of years.
David has a question for both of you, and then we're going to let Eric go.
Glad he's alive.
Yeah.
Okay. You ready? Okay.
Yep.
Since you guys have worked together on What's It Going to Take, would you ever work together in a club?
Sure, I would love to. I was almost going to do a show with Eric in June, but I was already booked. You wouldn't have to ask me twice. I'm sure it feels the same. Sure, you know, we don't really control that, you know, but if it happens, and I'm sure it will happen, of course, absolutely.
Oh, it'll definitely happen. Yeah, I asked Tommy. Tommy was already booked, and, you know, it was like a last-second thing. I asked him in April. It wasn't really a last-second thing. It was a couple months ahead of time, but he was already booked to do a show with me in June, and I would have loved it. It would have been awesome. But, you know, he was already booked, and then I was booked in different places, and then, you know, but, oh, it'll definitely happen, I'm guaranteed it'll be a really fun night. I know that.
A lot of fun.
But, yeah, that would be great. I'll have fun, yeah.
Well, if you guys do a show together, or when you do a show together, would you get together beforehand and write stuff together, or how would you do something like that?
You're lucky we would even go to the show together. No, of course. No. Our acts are separate. Our acts are totally separate. There'll be nothing to do with the other one. No, basically you're just working, you know, I work with comedians all the time, every weekend, and some of us know
it's
our
it's not like an Abbott, it's not like an Abbott Costello or, you know, Laurel. He may make a comment about me and it would be funny and I may do that here and there. But, you know, like the only ones out there that are still, that really do that is like Penn and Teller. You know, there's not like duos really anymore.
Exactly.
But I'm gonna head off, and then I'll let Tommy finish the interview. But hey, thanks for letting me call in. And
thank you for calling in, Eric.
No, thanks.
Thank you,
Sam, and take care, David. Have a good one.
You
thanks,
too,
Eric. Talk to you later.
No problem, Tommy. Later. Take
Adios.
Care.
Bye bye. Well, you do know that, you know, the old things always come back. It always spins back around, like the 70s style of clothing has come back and so on and so forth. So you could always bring the duos back and be the new Dean and Jerry or Abbott and Costello or something if you really wanted to do something like that. But I know a lot of people prefer working on their own as well.
Well, yeah, as far as the stand-up comedy, me with totally separate acts, Eric Jacob and Tommy Gooch totally said, "What's it going to take?" It's not stand-up comedy. It's a comedy adventure.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, in turn, where David mentioned working together with him, it'd be just working on a show. You know what I'm saying? You know,
right.
I mean, I work with different comedians as does Eric does every night, every weekend. So I'm happy to work with any comic. So, and I'd be happy to be on the card with Eric, you know, I haven't yet, but, you know, that'll come, so. But anyway, but I'm glad he called in.
Do you guys work the same area?
I hope to, my schedule opens up in the next year or so, and maybe I can go to different parts of the country. I'm actually lucky I'm going to be in Virginia this Saturday, which is really interesting, and I got a couple of nice little road gigs, but, regionally, we're working in a lot of the same spots, but we just haven't been on the same stage together. I mean, on the same card, as we would say. We haven't been on the same show at the same time, but it'll happen. You know, it'll happen eventually. But,
why don't you go ahead and tell our listeners where you're going to be, what's your upcoming shows. Tell them where you are so they can go see you.
Well, everything on that'd be great. I love that. Anyone who's listening to me, they know that just go to TommyGooch.com, and my website is nothing fancy. It's just a cyber business card. It tells you where I am, what I'm doing, and, you know, you can... In social media, I'm really just Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and it's all a redundant mess because, you know, whatever's on Twitter's on Instagram, and whatever's on Instagram's on Twitter, so it's just, you know... and anything can be found on my website. You can get a link to my all my social media links, my schedules, my contact info, and some of the best fun you can have is when you come off a stage, and this doesn't happen all the time, and then you find out that someone was there and you didn't know they were there, and that's such a great feeling. So I always tell people, surprise me. I'd love to see you. You know, it's always fun to go to a show and then you're done and then you find out that they were there and they're like, oh, that show was great. I'm like, oh, that's so great. They didn't call. You just knew I was going to be there and you came. That's so great.
Yeah.
So, but I'm glad I called in.
Social media helps that a lot, though. Thank God that we do have that because you get to get the word out more. Without social media, without Twitter, I wouldn't have found out about you and Eric and Tony and, you know, all the other stuff. Rob McNaughty, you know.
We knew
Alicia from before,
all my children. Yeah.
But,
No, it
but we didn't
does.
Know anybody
social
else
media
until now.
No, there's no doubt social media helps, so. All right. Well, that was this was great. Better than I thought it was. Longer than I thought it was. Jeez, my nephew is going to kill
me. Yeah,
me
too. You better get going.
But I'm glad I called in. It was a great, nice little dynamic, and I'm glad we got to talk. And first and foremost, thank you for having me. I don't think I took it for granted. I really appreciate it. And thank you for, you know, for promoting Silvertree and What's It Going to Take and all the shows they have.
Oh, no problem.
And I hope to talk to you guys, you know, maybe down the road when things get moving along more, we'll have more to talk about, you know?
Yeah, we love that.
You're definitely
thank you for making us laugh.
Yes,
thank you for having
needed,
me, Pam,
so.
And thank you, Dave. And I'll see you on Twitter and everything that's going on. And thank you. And I look forward to talking to you guys down the road.
You're very welcome. You're very welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, guys. Take care.
Bye-bye. Well, you know, there's not a lot of people that know what's going on out there, but, yeah, I've got medical issues with my dad, so it's not been really good lately. So when you get to do a show like this, you go – it's kind of like watching a TV show where you get to escape and go into another world and get your mind off your problems or your bad day or you hurt your toe or something, you know. And so – that's why I enjoy doing this. There's times before a show I think, oh, my gosh, am I going to be up for this? Am I going to be able to do it, you know? And then once you start talking and you get such great guests like you do with Tommy and with Eric and with Alicia and Rob McNaughty and all the various other guests that we've had, I mean, you're just in that moment, and it's wonderful.
Yep.
And I love to laugh. Comedy is my super favorite thing to watch on TV. So, you know, or go to a comedy show, and I know David enjoys it as well. So, you know, we laugh about a lot of things in the background and, you know, behind the scenes and stuff like that. So we hope that you guys out there listening were very entertained because these two guys were hysterically funny. And, David, you're in New York. Take a bus, take a cab, walk, something, go see them.
It's a long walk, buddy. I'd love to go.
If you start now, you'll get there by Friday, maybe.
Yeah, if I start now. Give me some rainwear, I'm off.
Yeah. Oh, God, because I'm here in Chicago, so, you know, you're right there with everything going on. I would love to live in New York or in California. I know there's a ton of stuff going on in Chicago. But for some reason, when you live in the area, you always want to go somewhere else, right?
Right. Even though that you have things close to you that you could go to, and you probably take it for granted that it's there, because it's there.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. You always want to do something that's new, and you think, okay, I'll go to the other place later. That's there. This was only happening now over there, so let's go over there. That kind of thing.
Yeah, I know.
So, yeah, I It's crazy how it works, but
there is a lot I want to see.
Yeah,
there is a lot I want to see.
Definitely. But you know, time and that. So we always time and money, as they say. It always comes down
time
to that.
Time and money.
But yeah. Well, I expect these guys to make it over to Chicago sometime soon, and I'll go watch them on you know, at some of the comedy places that are in Chicago. The only thing is, once Tommy gets on stage, he can't say Illinois because he's going to be in trouble.
There's one.
But yeah.
If they come to Albany, if they can come to Albany, that would be awesome. Because then I go.
Well, reach out to them on Twitter and ask them to come over there. I'm sure they got some clubs that they can, you know, go to over there as well. I don't think Albany's a small part of New York, so.
No, Albany is closer to where I am.
Yeah.
It's only, I would say that it's just over an hour from me, from where I am. I'd say almost
an
hour and a half.
How far are you from, like, Manhattan and everything, where everything goes
on
all the time? Hours?
4.5 hours.
Really? Oh, wow. You're really up there.
I'm up there. I'm upstate, as they call it. Yeah.
Yeah.
About 4.5 hours. But, you know, I have been, let me see. It's 2 hours to the train. And then it's another 2 hours to New York, because I've done New York. I've been to New York by train.
Yeah.
So it's 4 hours, and it's fast by train. I just wish it was, you know, easier to get on train.
Definitely. Well, hey, I got to take a plane, so, you know, you need to get on the train.
Oh, trains aren't, I love the train. Trains are great to ride. I've ridden the train. I don't mind it. I've never done a sleeper. Have you ever been done a sleeper car?
Yeah. Yeah, I did. Actually, my husband and I were in Las Vegas one time with his company that he works for. There was probably about 40 of us there from his company. And we were all flying back, of course, together. And the plane was having issues, and I'm a really bad flyer to start with. So when the captain comes on and says, you know, we're going to be sitting here for about, you know, a little while because we got to check something out, I'm already, you know, going ballistic. And then we take off, we get into the air, and I notice that the plane is, like, consistently making, like, flying a left turn, you know, like they're tilted left. And I asked my husband, I'm like, what the heck is they doing? Well, right before he tells me what his thoughts were on that, the captain comes on and goes, well, it looks like, you know, we didn't get that thing fixed, so we're going to have to turn around and go back. Oh, my God. That was it. I thought my life was over with. And my husband says, well, that's what they're doing by flying. He says, they're flying over the mountains to dump the gas in case there's a crash landing. If we get back to Vegas, I am not getting back on a plane to go home. There's no way. I had 3 babies at home at that time with my aunt, actually was watching them. So I said, no, that's it. We're not. And even my husband, which I was surprised, had said, you know, no, we won't get back on a plane. So we thankfully got back to Las Vegas airport and got off of the plane. And I says, okay, let's, you know, how are we going to get back? Well, we thought about taking the train, and we called up, and the first night, because it takes 3 days to get back home on a train from Vegas to Chicago.
Right.
So the first night, they didn't have any sleepers, so we had to sit in a regular chair. But those chairs are comfortable, so it was no big deal. And then the second night that we did, the second night we were in a sleeper, and it was nice. It was nice, you know, but the only thing about trains is, yes, we got to see a lot of the, you know, views and stuff like that. It put me to sleep. So I slept a lot. I mean, I even brought a book with me, and I would try to read it, and I'd be, because of the sway of the train, even though it's going fast, it would just, like, knock me out. So, and
wow.
Then we had some stops in between, you know, we had to stop in Utah, and we had to stop in Colorado, and we had to stop in Nebraska, and all these other things. So by the 3 days' time, I was ready to get off the train, but at least I knew I was getting off, and I was going to crash anywhere, you know. So I got to go home to my children.
That's good. That at least you were safe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So anyways, we will let everybody go because we were on here longer than we thought we were going to be, but we did have a lot of fun. But before I go, follow Tommy on Twitter at Gooch_Tommy, and that's G-O-O-C-H, Gooch_Tommy. Eric is at Eric Jacob, no S on that, so just Eric Jacob. Silver Tree Entertainment is at Silver Tree ENT. Go to TommyGooch.com for his upcoming shows and such. Go to SilverTreeEntertainment.com to watch, you know, a lot of their shows. Subscribe, $4.99 per month. Like we all said, it's very well worth it. A lot of stuff on there. There's something for everybody. If you're like me and you like, you know, the food channel and you like watching comedy, this is going to be perfect for you. But also I venture out into the other areas and found some great stuff on there too. And I also want to give a shout out to Tony and say thank you so much for allowing us to interview Tommy and Eric both. We had a great time, and we'll welcome back them anytime. So, and thank you to David for joining me today, and we'll be back again when we go ahead and set up the next interview, which we are always working on behind the scenes. So go to take2radio.com to see our upcoming guests when we put some on there, and our previous podcasts are on there. Trailers, the ones we were talking about, Surviving Sam, What's It Gonna Take, I put those on there, as well as David Gregory from One Life to Live, one of the Ford brothers. He has an audio version of a web series. It's a Western drama. And he's in it as well as writing it, and John Wesley Shipp. They have two episodes out now, and the next one is going to have...
Florencia?
Oh, my gosh. Thank you, Florencia. How do you say her last name?
Lozano?
Yeah. Lozano. Florencia Lozano, who played on One Life to Live. She's going to be on the third episode, so... Check all that out and follow us on Twitter at Take2Radio. That's with the number 2 on everything. Follow David at Take2RadioCrew. You can listen to us on the go. We're also on Spreaker, TuneIn, Stitcher, and iTunes, and it's all free. So you can pretty much catch us anywhere as well as listening to us on Blog Talk Radio. So if you follow Blog Talk Radio, us on Blog Talk Radio, I should say, we'll send you out an email each and every time we have a show scheduled. So thanks again, everybody. Have a great night. God bless each and every one of you, and we shall talk again soon. Thanks, David.
Yep. Thank you, Pam.
Take care.
Stay cool, you're everybody,
welcome.
And safe.
Thank you. Definitely. Bye-bye.
Good night.